Thank you for coming. It's good to see everyone. The pasuk tells us in last week's parasha that they informed Yosef, "Ayomer LeYosef, Hinei Avicha Chole, your father has taken ill." And the Gemara comments on Masechtas Bava Metzia on Pizayin Amud Aleph that Yaakov Avinu was the first person in the history of the world to take ill prior to his death. And the Gemara explains that, in fact, this innovation was as a result of the tefilos of Yaakov Avinu, also Yaakov Boi Rachamei Bahavi Chulsha. He asked for Rachman from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should take ill prior to his death, and Rashi explains, in order so that he should be able to command, to charge, to instruct his children as to how they should lead their lives. And writes the Rabbi Yeshua Ibn Shuib in his drushes on Parshas Vayechi, who was one of the Talmidim of the Rashba. He writes that there are 10 things we can learn from the way Yaakov Avinu conducted himself towards the end of his life. The first being, if you look at the middle of the second line, Ha'echad ha'tzava kishad ha'margesh ha'fisas kachaysa v'yam of kroivim lomus. Person realizes he's towards the end of his life. She'etzava banav uvnei ve'esai. Kichein matzinu b'yaakov v'etzava oisam. And that's what a person, that's how a person should conduct himself as well, is to follow this precedent of Yaakov Avinu. And this relates not only to how to instructing children how to lead their lives, giving Musar and Teichacha, which is what Yaakov Avinu occupied himself with, but people would like to take time at the end of their life, towards the end of their life, to instruct their children how they would like their assets, their property to be dispersed, to be split amongst their children. If I wanted to spend a few minutes this morning discussing the topic of wills and estates, estate planning. So as we're well familiar with, the Pesukim tell us in Parshas Pinchas, the Seder HaYerusha, the order of inheritance is dictated by the Torah, and as noted, very notable and it's obvious at the outset, is that one's wife is excluded, wife does not yarshin her husband, and daughters do not yarshin. They are, under certain circumstances, a wife certainly, daughters, if they're unmarried, are provided for by the estate, but they don't receive a formal share of the inheritance. So, if there is no sons, so then of course the daughters do yarshin. But in the absence, if there are sons, daughters don't receive a chelek, and neither does one's wife. Of course, if something is jointly owned between the husband and the wife, so then that it's not a yerusha; she's a partial, a joint owner, or if she's a beneficiary of a life insurance policy, that's not yerusha either. But when one's putting up a state in terms of formal yerusha, daughters don't receive a chelek. The Bechor, of course, receives two shares, and the wife also does not receive a chelek of the Yerusha. What if a person, though, would like to disperse his assets in a way that the daughters do receive an equal share, or perhaps that the wife also receives some significant portion of the inheritance? And that's not because he's motivated, because he feels the dinim of the Torah are unjust, and he wants to be more egalitarian. It's just this is what he feels he would like to do in his family, perhaps to avoid machlekes and to make sure that his wishes are carried out. So is there a mechanism, is there a vehicle by which a person could avoid or negate or override the dinim of the Torah as they're prescribed in Parashas Pinchas in the formal Seder HaYerusha? So the Mishnah tells us in Masechtas Bava Basra on Daf Kuf Chav Vav Mabez that if a person stipulates that one of his children should not inherit, Ish Pleni Beni Lo Yirash, or he disinherits one of his children, or Ha'emer Ish Pleni Beni Bechor Lo Yito Pishnaim, this child who's the Bechor won't receive two portions. So the Mishnah says, Lo Yomar Klum, it's totally ineffective. Shehisnel Masha Kosa B'Torah, he stipulated to do something that violates the Torah, and such a stipulation is invalid. It has no effectiveness at all. So the Gemara, though, brings up in the course of that discussion a famous machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda with regards to a person who proposes marriage to a woman. Ha'emer li'isha, in the middle of the second line, Hared mikudeshesli, amenash ein lecha alai sher ksus v'yoina. Part of the obligations of a husband towards his wife, as the Pesuk Pasuk tells in Parashas Mishpatim, is sher ksus v'yoinas alayigra. You have to provide her with clothing, support, and of course intimacy. So what if a person says, I want to get married, but without these obligations, without sher ksus v'yoina? So Rav Meir says, Harezim mekudeshes, the kedushin is valid, v'tnei obatel, but his stipulation is irrelevant, is totally ineffective. Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda disagrees, and he says, b'davar she'b'mamon, t'nei okayim. When it comes to issues of monetary issues, probably excluding oina then in this context, but when it comes at least to sharing ksus, the obligations of support and clothing, Rabbi Yehuda holds a person can make whatever stipulation he would like when it comes to areas of mamonis, monetary issues, the person can make whatever stipulation he would like. How do we understand the opinion of Rameir? Why can't a person stipulate he wants to get married without certain obligations of sharing ksus? So the Ksais HaChoshen writes, it's because we cannot discuss here in this context, it can't be Rabbi Yehuda holds, the reason why you can make a condition in this situation is because the wife is Meichel. That can't be why, because she forgives that obligation. Why? Because the obligation hasn't begun yet. You can only be Meichel something once as an obligation, and then you can forgive the obligation. But when it comes over here, for example, a person is owed, lends money, so someone else has to pay you back. And that's a mitzvah in the Torah, Priyas Baal Chayv mitzvah. But he's Michael alone, forgives the loan. So you can do that, even according to a mayor. Or a person has to pay his worker that day. But the worker agrees to be paid bi-monthly. So you can do that. You can make whatever arrangement you want. He has an obligation. I have an obligation to pay you. But the worker is Michael, that he'll get paid at the end of the month. That's fine. And even a mayor agrees to that. However, says Exodus over here, we're talking about prior to the obligation getting started. So that's a person's trying to create Kiddushin without the formal obligations that are prescribed by the Torah. You can't do that. In the opinion of Rameyer, you can't create Kiddushin without the obligations of sharing Ksus. And that's how the Ramban understands the opinion of Rameyer. If you look over here in the brackets, Rameyer says, Alav kol kumineisha lo yischayev lo. You can be Meichel whatever financial obligations you want, but you can't stipulate a Kiddushin without an obligation of sharing Ksus. And Rabbi Yehuda Savar, which is how we paskin, when it comes to the area of Mamanis, even in this situation, you can make whatever conditions you would like, because Rabbi Yehuda holds Dine Mamanis, Vidavar Shal Maman, Yochahu Limchol, Shaloi Amr Tayr, She Yischayv El Bertsoino Shal Zeh. You can even negate or stop the obligation before it ever gets started, because even though form of Mechila would not operate in that context, but because all of Dine Mamanis only apply when a person wants them to. You have Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is whenever we're dealing with monetary issues, a person has the obligation to make a condition that they shouldn't apply even before we ever get started. So to make a kiddushin without obligations of sharing ksus, you can make such a stipulation. And that's what we pass when it comes to Dine Mamanis, Taneo Kayim. So therefore, ask the Gemara, how come with regards to Yerusha, you can't make a similar argument? How come when a person stipulates that I don't want my son who's the Bechor to be take a double share, to take Pishnaim, I don't want this son, who's one of my rightful heirs, to take a share at all, well, why is it Loyamar Klum, Shehistah Masha Kasabatur, but we're dealing here with Dine Mamanis, shouldn't Rabbi Yehuda's position that whenever you're dealing with Dine Mamanis, Tenel Kain be applicable here as well? So the Gemara responds, the end of the third line, Hasam yada v'kamachla, over there the wife accepts the kiddushin and she's meichel the obligation, she forgives the obligation of sharing ksus. Hacha loy kamachil, here the inheritors are not, the yarshim are not there. The father's sitting together with his attorney, they're making up, this child is not going to get a share in the Yerusha. Okay, but the son wasn't meichel on his share. So the wife accepted the kiddushin knowing full well what she's getting herself involved in. She could be meichel. Here, the yarshim, who are the ones who have to be meichel in this situation, are not there to be meichel. So I asked the rights to Ran, Paris Lav Lemaimar de Imachu Mahani. This doesn't mean to say that if they would be Michael, it would work, because the Mishnah states it as a blanket statement. It doesn't stipulate that we're only talking about where the children aren't there. But the Ran says, Elo Rebusa Ka'amar. This is coming to an additional case. Da Filu Mahani Mechila, even if Mechila would work, Bechi Hacha Loi Machel. Even if Mechila would work, here they weren't Machel.
So when Rabbi Yehuda Acholkin,
when is the Machloikis of Rabbi Yehuda Amen according to this? 1 second. So here, though, even if they would be Machel, the Mechila, I'm sorry, even if Mechila would work, here they would not Machel. But right, the assumption of the Ran is that here Mechila does not work. It's different than sharing Ksus in the discussion of Rameir and Rabbi Yehuda. Here Mechila does not work. Why not? So the Rambam explains, because here is different than sharing ksus, here is different than paying back a loan, here is different than paying workers on time. The Rambam explains, Lufi shenemar v'parshas nachlas, the end of the first line, v'hoysu l'vnei Yisrael l'chukas mishpat. This is a non-negotiable, immutable axiom. You cannot override the halachos of nachlas, even with whatever conditions and stipulations you'll make. So the Brisker Rav explains in his Sefer on the Rambam over there, it's quoted by the Rabaruch Be'er in the name of Rav Chaim, that the din ha-Yerusha ain't zerak z'chus mamon. It means to say that Yerusha is not like all other areas of dinei mamon. It's like sharing, ksus, and paying back a loan, or paying workers on time. It's like Issa Veheta. It's like making a stipulation when you build your kitchen that Basa B'chalav should not apply in your kitchen. Obviously, such a stipulation is irrelevant. Ridiculous. So too over here, when it comes to Yerusha, it's not treated like other Dinei Mamonos. The Pasuk says, L'chukas Mishpat, that this is treated like Issa Veheta. And therefore, you cannot make a stipulation, a condition to override the halachas of Yerusha. Even when a person, huh?
So what is the Ran saying? You don't need the Ran.
No, the Ran is saying, how do you fit this into the Gemara? The Gemara said, the reason why you can't make a stipulation by Yerusha is because the Yarshim don't know. That implies if the Yarshim would know, it's okay. The Ran is saying, no. Even if Mechila would work here, the Yarshim happen to not know. But that's not the reason why you can't make a stipulation with regards to Yerusha. Good answer. That's what the Ran is coming to touch up. The Ran is saying, it really shouldn't have worked anyway. He's trying to say, even if it would have worked, it's a more obvious or easier answer. Similarly, even when a person wants to give his assets away while he's alive, a person wants to give a lifetime gift, obviously he has the right to do with his money whatever he wants while he's alive. But the Gemara tells us in Baba Bas over there, Kuflam and Gimel Mebez, that our Kaisav is the Chasav Lacherim Be'iniach Hezbonav Masha Asa. So a person gives away all of his assets while he's alive, he can do that. Ela Ein Ruach Chachamim Noecha Yemenu. Chachamim do not approve of this practice. Why don't they approve of the practice? So the Levush explains in his comments on Chesh Mishpat, based a similar comment as the Rambam. It's because this is what the Torah prescribed. The Torah wants, it's like one of the mitzvahs of the Torah, is that the person's inheritance should be dispersed according to the following formula that's listed in Parshas Pinchas. So if a person sidesteps that, by giving his assets away, even while he's alive, if he does that in preparation for his death to disperse his assets in a different formula, a different way, and he leaves his children out in the cold, then that's improper.
How about if there are no children and
it's
like an uncle?
No, there's no children, no formal yarshim, then we're discussing. It goes to the closest karev, to the father usually, and then if there's no father, then to the father's karev. I don't think that's what we're discussing. No, I don't think so, no. However, the Ksais HaChayshin is in Rech Pei Bei, Sifkot and Bei, where Moshe quotes it over here, Oizvav, quotes in the from Atash Beitz, that you can do partial, though, you can do partial redistribution. So, for example, a person's going to leave a certain amount that will be dispersed based on the prescription of Parshas Pinchas. Some of it will be dispersed, the Bechar will take two, all the sons will get an equal, will get one share. But the rest of his money he's going to give away as a lifetime gift. So the Ksais HaChayshin quotes him the Tashbeis, said that's sufficient because you fulfilled the prescription of the Torah, the mitzvah of the Torah, the Chukas Mishpat. You had part of your estate was dispersed based on the way it's described in Parshas Pinchas. The rest you gave away while you're alive. How much do you have to leave aside to be dispersed, according to the halachas of Parshas Pinchas? So the Tashbeis says, Dalet Zuzei. However, then the Chsam Sofer, Ramosha quotes it over here in Simikuf Nun Aleph, says that really you should have more of a significant sum. Ramosha claims, at least this way, in the time that Rabbi Shah wrote the Tshuva, that $1,000 to each Yairish was sufficient. It should be a significant amount of money. It doesn't have to be a great portion of the estate, but depending on the size of the estate, and some significant amount should be given at least to each Yairish, based on what it says in Parshas Pinchas. The rest, the person could give away as a lifetime gift to whoever he would like. And this is true with regard to tzedakah too. A person should not give everything to tzedakah. Even if it's tzedakah, it's still ein ruach hakamim leicha yemenu. The Rambam writes in Yeridei Simon Reish Mem Tesif Aleph that as we know, when a person is alive, there's generally a rule, al yavaz v'zyosim mechayimish, you should not give more than one-fifth of your money to tzedakah. Shalei tzarech l'biros, we're afraid a person themselves might come to need tzedakah. However, that's dafka koy mechayev while he's alive. Alba b'shas moisai, if he's giving it away towards the end of his life, there's no more concern, no longer concern that he's going to come to need other people's help. He's at the end of his life. Says Ramah, you can give away whatever you want, but Rabbi Kiva Eger says you shouldn't give away more than a third. Ramosha writes in that Igros Moshe too, you should leave aside, make sure that there's a significant part of the estate that's left aside for the Yarshim. Yeah. What do you want to ask?
What kind of calculation is this? Based on
Shein Ruach
Ha'am Ruach Ha'am. No, it's very odd. I mean, is it binding? Is it like, we had before one side of the Machlokas was a person can do whatever they want with their money, don't worry about it, and the other side was like...
Now, while you're alive, clearly you can do whatever you want, but if you're giving away your assets in preparation for a person's ensuing death, And he's doing it in a way that there's not going to be a fulfillment of the Psukim of Parshas Pinchas. The Chachamim don't approve of it.
Exactly. What kind of fulfillment is this to say $1,000? Either it's binding or it's not binding. Which way is it?
No, because you fulfilled it with, for example, there's some, find another context too. Let's say, two years ago when we had the Shnas HaShemitah and all the loans were canceled, Rosh Hashanah at the end of the Shnas HaShemitah. So we all wrote a prosbol that all of our loans should not be canceled. But there are many, Avadi Yosef quoting the Chavadas from the Ben Yishchai, there are many who had a practice to make a loan that should dafka be canceled. One loan should be canceled to fulfill the pasuk in the Torah of Shemitah Tzafim. Or people who, let's say, sell their land in Eretz Yisrael for the Shnas HaShemitah, for those who subscribe to the Heter Mechira. So there are those, though, who leave a portion of their field aside that they're going to be fulfill Shnas Shabbos in Yel Haaretz. There's an idea, even if you're doing a valid workaround, but at the same time, to fulfill the pasuk in the Chumash.
That would view the pasuk in the Chumash like as an essay.
Yeah, it's that's what the Rambam says. It's a chukas mishpat. It's kind of like isav haheter. It's something that we should do. That's what it implies. Yeah.
But you know,
that's why it's not dine mamonis. It's not typical monetary issues that you can make whatever conditions you want. You can't, because this is like isav haheter.
It's like isav haheter. It's like you said before. I can't make it tonight. That in my kitchen, you get a tray.
Right.
So it's a very unclear.
No, but you can at the same time you can do whatever you want with your money while you're alive. But you shouldn't. And you're right. We can't fault you. You know. You didn't violate the chukas mishpat if you gave all your money away while you're alive, but you didn't fulfill the pasuk of the Torah, so you get kind of a backhanded disapproval.
Death, even at death, this what Rav Moshe is talking about is doing it.
Lifetime gifts.
No, but the way he's talking about splitting up the assets to the children. So he said there's basically a way to sidestep what's written in Parshas Pinchas.
If you give it away while you're alive.
Oh, it has to be while you're alive.
Yeah. If you do against that which it says in the Mishnah, that which it says in the Torah, that's a masna masha kosa b'Torah, tenei ubata over here, this is isav haheter. We're talking about if you give a lifetime gift, even if you give it away while you're alive, which clearly you can do, if you leave nothing for your children, it's the wrong thing. That's what it means.
Giving at least $1,000 for what?
$1,000.
Right, so
a token amount. I mean, it's not a significant amount.
The million dollars the guy has to be while he's still alive. It can't be.
No, otherwise that's against the Torah. You can't do that. You can't make a condition against this. Stipulates against that which it says in the Torah.
Oh, so it has to be lifetime gift.
Yes.
Oh.
Even a lifetime gift is still wrong.
I see.
That's still wrong.
Either way.
Yeah. So a partial redistributions are okay if a person makes a lifetime gift out of it. The problem with lifetime gifts, which is really the best solution if a person wants to disperse his assets in a different way than that was prescribed in the Parshas Pinchas, where the daughters don't yarshin, the wife doesn't yarshin. The problem, though, with lifetime gifts, and it's a great option, but the problem with it is that, first of all, you can't change, well, you know, can't change your mind once you decided to disperse them in a certain way because you gave it to that party. And the second problem is that you don't know when a person doesn't know when they're going to pass away, so you never know when you want to transfer these assets. You might do it early on, but then you don't have the assets to live off of. So it's a very tricky situation because the person is basically giving away all of his assets while he's alive and trusting that he won't change his mind with how he wanted it distributed and that he won't get other assets later that will then later need to be dispersed. And a person needs his assets while he's alive to live off of. So lifetime gifts, even though it sounds like a simple solution, as long as you leave aside a token amount or some sort of monochoshu, if you leave aside $1,000 for each yerish, it's not really a practical solution. So that's why many people write secular wills, how they want their assets distributed. The problem is that wills take place after a person is already passed away. And even though his wishes have been expressed, it's clear what he wants and how he wants his assets distributed, this seems to be a violation of the Mishnah in Baba Basra that we started with, an Ois Gimel, that you say, I don't want my son, who's a Bechor, to take Pishnaim, I don't want this Yerush to get an equal share, or to get his rightful share, so then you can't do that, Loyam or Klum, that's insignificant. Even though this will is valid in Dina de Malchusa Dina, it's valid in secular courts, also seems to have no bearing on our issue. The Ramah, and Ois Ches over here, Simon Shin Samach Pesach Chesed Mishpat, quotes in the name of a Chuvas HaRashba, that a person, it deals with the case of a man who was marrying a woman, a wealthy woman, or she was getting a sizable dowry, and the father-in-law was concerned lest they get divorced, quickly, or even if they would get divorced after some time, but he wanted those assets to stay in the family. So he wanted her to get married on condition that the husband should not yashin her. Husband yashins his wife doesn't yashin the husband. So can you make such a stipulation? So even though you can, in Dina de Malchusa Dina, you could write that in a secular will, the Rajba says, Dina de Malchusa Dina here has no application. It doesn't apply. I mean, Dina de Malchusa Dina is a very large subject, but it has no application unless it's something to do with, that benefits the Malchus, that benefits the municipality. And also, when you're only dealing with Ovdei Kochavim, when you're dealing with two Jews, Dina de Malchusa Dina has no bearing. So, and says the Ramah, if we would apply Dina de Malchusa Dina here, him came Batul, called Dina Yisrael. So then all of the Dina Yatara of Ribbis, everything would be Batul if we would apply Dina de Malchusa Dina in this context. So clearly, Dina de Malchusa Dina doesn't apply to validating a secular will. At the same time, Ramosha has a famous tshuva in Chelek Aleph of Eben Ezer, that even though Dina de Malchusa Dina doesn't apply directly, it might apply indirectly. Because Ramosha argues that if you write in a secular will that you want your assets distributed according to a different formula than is prescribed in Parshas Pinchas, you want your daughter to take an equal share, you want your wife to take a sizable portion of the inheritance of the estate. So as Rav Moshe says, clearly that's what you have, you intend for that to be the case, and you sincerely mean it, and you're committed to it. Because this will could be enforced in a secular court. True, it would be a violation of halacha, but if you would take it to a secular court, it could be enforced. So says Rav Moshe, that is clearly what you have in mind, and you're committed to that. So Rav Moshe claims, when that's what you're committed to such a great degree, so then that could replace or substitute in the place of a formal maisa kinyan. Normally in halacha, in order to transfer ownership, you need a formal act of acquisition. Form of transfer. We have kinyan kesef, kinyan shtar, kinyan chazaka, kinyan meshicha. We have formal forms of acquisition. So Moshe claims that's only necessary when you haven't necessarily committed or it's unclear what you really have in mind. So I need a maisa kinyan to reinforce what I have in mind. But here it's obvious what I have in mind because I committed myself to this in a secular will which could be enforced in secular court. So Moshe claims, therefore, I don't need a formal kinyan in order to transfer ownership to my heirs or to the way I want it distributed as prescribed in my will. It takes place because, by very definition, the fact that I wrote in a will could be enforced in secular court, because if Dina de Malchusa Dina, that should replace the requirement for a maisa kinyan. So writes Rav Moshe, Ach be'etzem estabel ani yazdaiti, she'tavor kazu shavada yizkayim kedivrei mitzavah b'dina de Malchusa. If you would take it to the secular court, be'iser, it could be enforced. So ain't tzarich kinyan, you don't need a maisa kinyan, a formal kinyan. She'ein locha kinyan gadol mizeh, this is the greatest form of kinyan. U'memeila kevin she'ein tzarich kinyan mayol midina. It should work midin ha'tayra as well. Not directly because of dina de Malchusa Dina, but indirectly, because if this is clearly what you desire to take place, and you've committed to it, by virtue of the fact that it could be enforced in a secular court, so that should replace the maisa kinyan. Af neged ha-yarshim, af shu masna lachar misa, even though it's taking place after his death. V'zeh tam gadol umashe ba'aretz hazois, noigim lismach al tzavos ke'egu. That's why in America there was a custom to rely on these secular wills. Ve'en chayshim ilika chamos l'tztaka, you have no problem accepting a disbursement from this will. V'im ke'elo noxu mizeh, mikomokum kibnu ha-emes, even if they didn't explicitly articulate this argument, or major claims, this is what clearly perhaps a justification for writing a secular will.
When is going to be the chalos?
1 second. Good point. So there is a precedent for this, right?
In Ramah's case, it's also enforceable in legal courts, and he could say the same story.
So the Ramah is discussing directly, we don't apply Dina de Malchusa Dina, but Ramah is just saying a backdoor. Ramah is just saying, wow, if it's enforced in secular court, that should replace the requirement for Ramah's
appeal. You shouldn't do it, but if someone already did it, you can.
No, Ramah is just claiming it as a limud zchus. But he seems to be pretty convinced of his argument. So now there is a precedent for that which Rav Moshe is saying, which is going to be one big problem. But there is a precedent for it. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Baba Basra that Isser Giyura had an estate, the Treisa Alfi Zuzi, that he wanted to yarsh into his son Ramari. The problem is Isser Giyura was a ger, and his son was also a ger. And Gerish and his guy could cut the Chenoyotam. Even though biologically they were related, Alpi Halacha, there was no relationship there, and the son would not Yarsh and the father. Alpi Halacha. So he was at the end of his life, and he wanted to transfer his assets, Matana Mechayim, to his son. Because otherwise he wasn't going to Yarsh. So the Gemara says, how is he supposed to do this? So he says, well, give it to him as a present. Take it, wrap it up, and give it to his son. So the Gemara says, well, the son isn't there. So how can he Yarsh it to his son? So the Gemara at the end of the second line writes, Maskef Law. Rav Ika Bereid Rav Ami Amai Veloidi Iser De Halan Zuzi De Rav Mari Ninhu. Let him just admit that it already belongs to his son. Veliknin Hu Beoidisa. let him be kind of it with that admission alone. Meaning, I admit, even though it's not true, I admit that these assets belong to my son. I just say, in the presence of two witnesses, these assets belong to my son, but they don't. They belong to me. That itself transfers ownership to the son. How does that work? That's called a kinyan oidisa. How does that work? So explains Rabbi Chanan in the Kovet Shiurim, right over there in the brackets, V'tam davar zeh, kaven sheyadeh shelo yuchal lachzer meyadosai, since in court, if I make an admission that I owe you money, that's valid, hodos baldin kameya edim dami, a concept throughout Shas, if I admit a certain financial obligation, that's valid in court, and you can't retract. So kaven sheyadeh shelo yuchal lachzer meyadosai, muchok degamer machni, it must be that he was committed, or he, that itself can transfer ownership to the son. From the fact that I made such an admission, which could be enforced in court, that itself substitutes for the requirement of a formal Maisa Kinyan and the ownership. When you make that admission.
That's not Rav Moshe's case. Exactly.
So, but what you see from that is a parallel to Rav Moshe, which is, if it is clear that I'm committed to this disbursement or to this change of ownership, even if I have no formal Maisa Kinyan at all, ownership gets transferred. Or, for example, the Gemara says in Bava Metzia, and I find Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, there's a kinyan, one of the kinyanim that works is called Situmta. Situmta means whatever is the minig ha-seichrim, the minig of those who do business in that part of the world, in that time and place. If that is the minig that people engage in a certain, let's say, gesture at the end of a transaction, and that seals the transaction like a handshake, so then that's valid al-pi halacha too. So too says the Radvaz, anything that's valid al-pi dina de malchus adina, even if dina de malchus adina doesn't apply in this context between two Jews, but it's an accepted practice in that part of the world, it could be enforced in secular court. That substitutes for the requirement for a Maisa Kinyan. That's why the Kinyan is known as Situmta. That's why at the end of selling chametz to the Nachri, we shake hands. With the Nachri, one of the Kinyan that we used to sell the chametz.
You can't make a Kinyan like a Misa.
Oh. So the problem with Rav Moshe's Tshuva is, yes, you don't need a Maisa Kinyan. It's a good argument that he's making. The problem is, when is this taking place? It's taking place la'achar Misa. There's not a Matana Mechayim. So once a person, the problem is not that he's not around to make a Maisa Kinyan. The problem is once a person passes away, his assets no longer belong to him. They've already transferred to his Yarshim. There's no Kinyan that's required by Yerusha. It happens de facto. It happens automatically. Because he doesn't want to transfer ownership while he's alive. He doesn't want to give away his assets. Huh? Someone else pick it up on behalf of him. You could have done that. It's a good sugya. The whole hard sugya. It's coming up. So, but anyway, the Gemara there raises many possibilities. But the problem with Rav Moshe's tshuva, and this is why it's not been accepted by Rav Apaiskim, is because it's happening in Achar Misa. So apparently Rav Moshe believes, tremendous Kiddush, apparently Rav Moshe believes that a person does retain some control over his assets even after he passes away. And even though that's hard to believe, there is in fact a Ravid seems to subscribe to a similar position. The Shidim Kubet says over here, Oysir Aleph and Baba Basra is discussing a Get Makushar. Get Makushar was a certain type of get that was written for Kohanim, or in towns where there were many Kohanim, that was different than a typical get. A typical get is a shtar with two Edim that sign on the bottom. A Get Makushar is folded over many times, and each time you fold it over, you have to have two witnesses that sign. It takes forever to write. Why did they do this? In order to give the kohen a little time to contemplate his decision before the get took place, because he would never be able to remarry his wife. Kohen can't marry a grusha. So if he divorces her and he later changes his mind, he can't remarry her. So he wanted to take longer. We're stalling. It's a stall tactic, is to write a get makushar, where it takes longer to write the get and give the kohen time to come, perhaps to his senses, calm down. So there are other shtaros too. Once we have a get makushar is written like that, where it's folded over and witnesses sign in all of the folds, there are other shtaros too. Shtari mamano also written in a similar way. So the Ravid explains, why is that the case? Why do we write shtari mamon like that, monetary documents? It makes sense by get, it doesn't make sense by shtari mamon. So the Ravid explains, shloi lach like b'masa shtaros. We don't want to distinguish between shtaros. We write a get like that, so in that part of the world, wherever they do a get like that, they'll do shtari mamon like that. All shtaros documents should all be handled the same way. And the Ravid brings a proof to that. Another example of where we didn't we transferred one thing from getin to shtari mamon in order not to distinguish between the way we treat shtaros. May high time anami amrin and the ein shtar lachar misa. That's also why you can't give away your assets lachar misa. You can't make a transaction lachar misa like a get. You can't give a get lachar misa because a person is no longer married to his wife. He passed away. She's now a widower. You can't now write a get after he passes away. They're no longer married. So too says the Rav, in order not to distinguish between Shtarei Mamon and Gittin, you can't write a Kenyan, you can't write a Shtar Kenyan Lach Amisa either.
Write a get that it's called.
Now. But that's a whole separate issue. But right, once a person passed away, he can't write a get.
Right.
Not here. But the Ravid says, that's also why I can't write a star moment after Misa, not to distinguish. So Rabbi Chanan writes in the Kavit Shirim, that's the reason you can't write a star lach Misa? No. The reason you can't write a star lach Misa is because you don't own your property anymore. So must be the Ravid held. No, you do. You do. You retain certain property rights even after a person passes away. And he therefore says, Ramayashi has the right to dictate how he wants his assets dispersed. The only problem is he's not around to make a Maisa Kenyan. So Ramayashi says, you don't need a Maisa Kenyan. If you wrote it in a secular will, which could be enforced in secular court, that substitutes in the place of Maisa Kenyan because you clearly committed to this arrangement.
What happens if the Ger doesn't have a Tavo?
Again.
Property. He has no Yerushim.
So then, Al Pi Halacha, what happens to it?
Yeah.
I don't know, the courts will take over.
So
anyway.
Maybe the case over here, by the Ger.
He loses, I think it becomes Hefker.
Maybe over there it helped because there were no Yershim, so we listened to what he wanted, not because it didn't Kinyan him, but because he was a Ger.
The Gemara derives a principle from it called Kinyan Idisa.
But maybe that's maybe only over there, it's because there is a.
You're saying a huge Kiddush.
Yeah, I understand, but
you're shining down
there. There's no Yersh, there's no Baal Bas, so we listened to what he wanted. But by rights.
either it transfers ownership or it doesn't.
No, since there's no Baalim, so Bezum say, we listen to the guy what he wanted.
This
no,
is not a Rachmanis, either it works or it doesn't.
There's no Kinyan.
So, but Ramosha's position is quite difficult and has not been accepted by any of the Paiskim. I mean, Ramosha, obviously, but it's not been accepted in modern Bote Din because it's too difficult to understand to accept that a person should have maintained control of his assets, Lachar Misa. There is a similar position to Ramosha, but coming from a different angle. Huh? So we'll get to 1 second. So, it's a good point. So, Reb Chaim Oizer had a similar argument to Reb Moshe, but coming from an entirely different perspective. The Gemara tells us in Masechtas Gittin a concept called Mitzvah L'Kaim Divrei Ames. There's a mitzvah to fulfill the wishes of a person after he passes away. This is also derived from Yosef in last week's Parsha. If you look back at the drashas of Rabbi Yeshua Ibn Shuib and Oiz Beis, Vahasheni, what else can we learn from Yaakov Avinu at the way he conducted himself prior to his death? His mitzvah l'kaim divrei ames, he asked his children to bring his bones back to Eretz Yisrael, and they listened to him. Vayasu banav loy ken kasher tzivam. They listened to him. From here we derive a concept called mitzvah l'kaim divrei ames. So the Gemara there in Masechtas Gittin, discussing the following case of a person who gives money to bring or to give to somebody else. And when the shliach gives it to a messenger to bring to somebody else, when the shliach gets to the beneficiary, to the recipient already passed away. So what should he do with the money? So v'loy matzo, yasu l'mishaleach, go back to the person who sent you, to the giver. Meis mishaleach, what if the person who was giving the gift, the original owner, passed away? Now what do you do? The recipient passed away, the original owner passed away. So Nassan and Rabbi Yaakov say you give it to the person, the Yarshim of the person who sent you, the original owner. But V'yeshayim, and this is the opinion of Rameir, this is how we paskin, is that no, you give it to the Yarshim, Mishnishtalchuloi, the Yarshim of the recipient, because mitzvah l'kaim divrei ames, mitzvah to fulfill the wishes of the person even after he passed away. So argues Reb Chaim Oizer that perhaps we could validate a secular will. Not because it's it replaces a Maisa Kenyan, something like that, but rather because it's a fulfillment of this mitzvah l'kaim divrei ames. The problem is that Tosfos there writes in Masechtas Gittin that the only time we apply mitzvah l'kaim divrei ames is if it's hushlosh mitchila l'kach biyad shlish. It's given, like the case that the Gemara is discussing, it's given to a third party to bring to somebody else or to give to the recipient. But if it's not given to a third party, it remains in the ownership of the original giver, the mitzvah l'kaim divrei ames does not apply. It has to be given over to a third party. It's like an escrow. So why is that the case? Why does it have to be given over to a third party? So Reb Chaim Oizer suggests that perhaps Rabbeinu Tam feels the reason it needs to be given over to a third party is because otherwise we don't take you seriously that this is what you really meant. You might have said it, but we don't know if you really meant it. If you gave it to a third party, you take care of this after I'm gone, please give it to so-and-so. So then clearly you meant what you said. So Reb Chaim Oizer says, if you write a secular will about how you want your estate dispersed and given out, and that's valid in secular court, that should be the equivalent of Hushlosh Mitchila B'Yashlish, because clearly you're committed to this, because it's going to be enforceable in secular court. So Reb Chaim Eisner says that should substitute for the requirement of Hushos Miyad Biyad Shlish. Right over here in the second line of Teshuvah Zachiyez, he writes, Gam Mikvar Ha'isi Mitzalei Loimah, Dehechad Shemish Shetziva Hameis Liten Loi, Hu Mukhzak Mitam Dina Demalchusa, Bikiyum HaTzavai Deyal Kor. Since it could have gone to the secular court and enforced the secular will, Loi Boi Hushos Mitchilu Lekach. You don't need to give it to a third party. El Shalom Atzasi Gilei L'dinze. No one else agreed to Reb Chaim Eisner on this issue.
This mitzvah, the Kamei Dibur HaMes, overcomes the chukas, the Rambam Tassin, the Aloch, that you're not allowed to give a chukas.
It's like a Matnas Chaim. No, it's like a lifetime gift. You're fulfilling what I asked for when I was alive. Yeah, I hear your point. Many others disagree with Reb Chaim Eisner that that's not why you need Hushos Mitchilu Lekach. The reason why you need Hushos Mitchilu Lekach is because it separates it from the rest of the estate. You gave it to a third party, now it's not part of the Yerusha any longer. Not because we want to make sure that that's what you meant. So again, that's why Reb Chaim Eisner's psak is really generally not accepted either in contemporary Batei Din as a justification for a secular will. Let's say a person, though, got a disbursement from a secular will, or some aunt left a person, you know, a Yerusha, and there were Yarshim there, but she liked you know, the nephew or something, and she, overrode the dinim of the Torah, Parshas Pinchas, and giving you a chelik of the Yerusha, and all she had was a secular will. Tzedakas have this issue all the time. So can you keep the money? So Reb Chaim Eisner quotes in the Binyan Siyan, that yes, you can keep the money, because you could say, I hold like Reb Chaim Eisner, I hold like Reb Moshe, perhaps it's a b'dieved justification for accepting a gift from a secular will, perhaps it's good enough. But as a milah chachilah for a person to arrange his estate and just relying on a secular will, even though that was the opinion of Reb Moshe, it was the opinion of Reb Chaim Eisner, is generally not accepted as a valid approach. Unless you take the money and you put it in a trust.
Right.
If you take the money and you put it in an irrevocable trust,
right,
where you are, the person themselves is not the trustee. If the person is a trustee and it's a revocable trust, that's a joke. That's just like putting it underneath the mattress.
It wouldn't work. You can't be a trustee.
You can't set it up like that.
You can't be a trustee.
You can't be a trustee in your own trust.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but if it's a way that it's totally set aside, then that would be Hushel Shmitchilu Lekach. That would be Hushel Shmitchilu Lekach. And then you could rely on the secular will.
It's more than that. You're not the Bible anymore. It's not your money anymore.
It's not your money.
It's not your money.
Yeah. So that's like a Matnas Chaim. If you are giving it away now, you can't change your mind. That's not true. You don't want to be able, a person's going to ride his assets to his son when he's 50 years old, he doesn't want to be able to give it to somebody else?
The Gemara talks about if you give a get,
you can do that. You can do Meha Yom Lach Hamisa, but then it's not no longer yours. And what do you do about the things that you acquired subsequently? Lifetime gifts work, but there are limitations to it. So the standard solution that's proposed, and this is the final thing, is the Ramah writes over here in Chayshim Mishpat Simarech Pei Aleph Sif Zayin, is what's known as a Shtar Chatzi Zachar, or a Shtar Zachar Shalim, which is that a person obligates himself while he's alive to anybody who's not a formal Yerush, obviously a Bechor or a son who receives it, is entitled to a full Chelok in Yerusha, he doesn't have to do this, but anyone who's going to receive part of the Yerusha, who's not a formal Yerush, he obligates himself during his lifetime to pay an enormous sum that will be collected la'achar misa, way more than the estate will be worth in its entirety. And then he writes in his tzava, he writes in his secular will, or whatever, that obligation, this enormous sum that he obligated to his wife, to his daughters while he was alive, will only be payable if the sons don't give you what I asked them to disperse you in my will. But if they give you what I asked them to give you in the will, so then this amount is no longer collectible. So then it's not a typical will, they're paying this amount to the daughters or to the wife in order to avoid the penalty of the obligation, to pay off the obligation that you accepted while you're alive. And that's what's known as a star chatzi zachar. They used to do this only to give the daughters half a chelek, but you can do such a thing as a shtar zachar sholem to give her an equal share in the Yerusha. Yeah.
See over that. Let's say he thought the value of his estate is 100, and he gave, and there are two kids, like a boy and a girl. So he gave her a shtar of 50. By the time of the Yerusha,
why would he do that?
The value of the assets is down to 50.
No. You only do this if the amount you're gonna obligate yourself in is more than the estate. In its entirety. If you have $1 million estate, you obligate yourself for $10 million. Then you say, but you know what, if you give her an equal share, the loan, this amount is not collectible. Right, yes. Another point, and one final issue, is that Rabbi Kiva Eger writes in his Chuvis is that even though Kibbut Aviyim doesn't apply in this situation because it's Michel Bain, a son doesn't have to spend money on Kibbut Aviyim, and here the parents don't benefit at all from that which happens after they're no longer here. But it's still somewhat of a fulfillment of Kibbut Aviyim to make sure that a person's assets are distributed, and the children should make sure the assets are distributed based on the parents' wishes, even though it's not necessarily enforceable like that. But, you know, if you do one of these mechanisms, vehicles, it is enforceable. But even if it's not enforceable, the children should see to it that that they follow the wishes of the parent. You know, the Gemara says in Brachis, that when a person leaves his friend, so you say, Lech l'shalom. You say, go in peace. When a person leaves an iftar, so you say, Lech b'shalom. Also, a different lashon. That's why the Gros says, the Pesach says in Parashas Vayeshev, lo yachlu dabro l'shalom. The brothers weren't able to talk to Yosef l'shalom in peace, meaning while he was alive. They needed him to no longer be here. Lech b'shalom. They could say to him, Lech l'shalom. They weren't able to talk to him. So some comment, why do we say to the Nifter, Lech B'Shalom? He's no longer here. What's Lech B'Shalom? So they say, no, the Darshanim say, we're really talking to the Yarshim. Leave here in peace. Make sure everybody gets along, because that's the wishes of the parent, is to make sure that the Yerusha is settled according to the wishes of the parent, but in a way that people will all get along. The worst possible thing is to fight over Yerusha. So it's kedai to follow the advice of Rabbi Yeshua, even Shuib, to take care of these things when a person still is able to. Yeah.